When we share someone's story here on the Diaries, the episode might end, but their story doesn't. So many of the people we've talked to, they've gone on to do incredible things. They have epic adventures and make significant impacts in our community. Over on Diaries Plus, we're catching up with some of our former guests to see what they've been up to. I recently sat down with Connor Ryan, a Lakota professional skier from our Sacred Slopes episode, who's been knocking out groundbreaking projects ever since the episode aired. It's really incredible. We had a great discussion about the impacts he's made, what keeps his fire burning, and taking ski lessons as a pro skier. Here's a snippet of the conversation.
All the source of joy that I use to fill my cup to be out in the world doing positive things comes from my relationship to the outdoors. And so I've really focused on like, wow, like there's so much power if I can give one person the relationship to the outdoors that I have through skiing. And maybe that will have as profound of an effect on them as it's had on me.
To listen to the full episode, use the link in the show notes to subscribe to Diaries Plus today. Yeah, you get more shows, but you also have a peace of mind of powering what's out there right now, keeping us moving forward, keeping this community together. So thank you for everyone who supported and everyone who's going to support. We appreciate it.
Are you nervous? Rebecca asks. I tuck my knees to my chest and rest my feet on the passenger dash. Not currently, but we'll see once the gun goes off, I say. She throws the camper van into park, and I go through the same routine I've had for the last 5 months. Everything laid on the bunk of the loft, spaced out evenly, so I can take careful inventory of the supplies I've thoughtfully curated. 2 16-ounce water bottles, hydration mix, chocolate peanut butter balls, ibuprofen. I sit and pull on my shoes, snug but not too tight, and generously apply Body Glide to the unspeakables. Rebecca looks at me and asks if I have everything. I shrug my shoulders. We'll find out soon. She shoots me the type of incredulous look that only a partner would understand. I wouldn't be here without her. We walk the half mile to the starting line in the dark of the early morning. It's so quiet and peaceful. As we approach the middle school, the dull glow of a dozen large overhead lights illuminates the starting area. Spouses, partners, parents, and children have all sacrificed a good night's sleep in support of their loved ones who have spent weeks, months, or maybe even years preparing for this race. For some runners, it's simply another training day. But for us middle-of-the-pack runners, this is an event that stirs those stomach butterflies. For me, it's the opportunity to prove that I'm stronger than I think I am. Rebecca wraps her arms around me, her face tucked in the crook of my neck. She whispers, "You can do this." I take my jacket off and hand it to her, exposing my skin to the chilly November air. I sink down low to the ground and give my deepest appreciation to my sweet dog, Mars, placing my forehead against hers and kissing her nose repeatedly. She's the best training partner and coach I could have ever asked for. She's been by my side through the nearly 1,000 miles that have brought me here. I'm scared to do it without her. I stand, give Rebecca a kiss, and make my way to the starting line. It's 5:28 a.m., and I'm standing shoulder to shoulder in a corral of more than 200 runners in Montgomery Village, Maryland, awaiting the start of the 2021 Stone Mill 50-mile endurance race. We're packed so tightly into the starting area that any attempts to move or stretch are met with a bump, followed by, "My bad, all good." Everyone seems to settle into some version of bouncing up and down on the tips of their toes to suffice as a warm-up. The gun goes off, and we take flight like a swarm of fireflies, our headlamps dancing in the dark as we collectively dart for the woods. Five months earlier, Rebecca, Mars, and I stood on the banks of the Potomac River as I felt a declaration rising inside of me. Like the first time you nervously tell someone you like them, I looked at Rebecca, fought past the frog in my throat, and nervously said, I think I want to run an ultra marathon. I watched her brow furrow and her nose begin to scrunch. She looked up at me and reminded me that I'd never even come close to running that far. She was right. I'd only run a single half marathon 11 years earlier, and painful shin splints had left me a bit battered and significantly demoralized. I was so discouraged that I stopped running altogether at the age of 23. Her question? Why now? Well, many of my family members had been going through difficult and painful life events. I felt that it was my time to conjure a bit of inspiration for them by doing something big, something meaningful. Just a few weeks earlier, Mars and I had begun running together. Her energy levels far exceeded playing frisbee in the park, so I figured we'd give trail running a go. At three separate points on our first day out, I'd burst into tears, weeping for the two decades I'd lived drowning in depression. A broken home, an alcoholic father I haven't heard from in over 20 years, and a mother who, despite her best efforts, couldn't figure out how to ask if I was okay. I'd developed a hardened exterior to hide all the pain I was holding inside. Mars had led me to the place that both of us needed most, the woods. Mile one. It doesn't feel like a race, but rather I'm running with a few hundred friends I haven't met yet. We all hoot, holler, yip, and yeehaw our way up and down the trail, dodging roots and rocks, songs pouring out of us almost involuntarily as adrenaline courses through our veins. We're rested, well-trained, and ready for what's ahead. After the first few miles, the initial jitters and hollers burn off, and I settle into my pace, feet meeting earth, breath searching for its proper moments, all creating the meditative rhythm that lies within a body in motion. At mile six, the sun begins to rise and slowly illuminate our surroundings. Headlamps are retired to vest pockets and packs, and our eyes begin to adjust. Witnessing the birth of the new day's light is one of the many things Mars has brought into my life. She needed to run, and I was introduced to what I now consider to be the most beautiful time of day, to pay respect to the sun as it rises, thanking it for its warmth, its light, and its guidance. I wonder if those around me look forward to that same moment, or are they simply relieved to no longer be in the dark? What has brought each of them here? How similar or different are their stories to my own? I have so many questions, but there is one thing I do know. Regardless of talent, speed, or background, each of us has arrived with the same goal, to make it to the finish line, that metaphorical yet tangible threshold that bonds each and every one of us together. Mile 8 delivers the first aid station. I down two salted potatoes, grab a banana to go, and return to a gentle jog. Three men settle into the same pace as me, and I eavesdrop on their conversation to pass the time. One of them begins talking about mile 18 and how that's always where things go south for him. He says, that's where my race begins. I let them pass and try to save as much as I can for later in the race. I sure as hell don't want to share the same fate as that guy. Mile 18. God damn it, I say out loud. That guy Jedi mind tricked me. Psychosomatic or not, I am uncomfortable. Both of my knees begin to tighten. I have no idea what this is or why it's happening, but this is apparently also where my race begins. Breathe, I tell myself, closing my eyes for short spurts, trying to simulate meditation. This calm under pressure thing is new to me. A coping mechanism I learned in psychiatric rehab. Three months ago, in the middle of my training, Rebecca pulled me up off the floor of our bedroom and drove me to a psychiatric emergency room. We sat in the waiting room and she filled out the paperwork as tears streamed down my face. I signed the page admitting me to a 2-week program and began the healing process. Therapists, nurses, and facilitators surrounded me. They wanted to know the real story of what brought me to my breaking point. With no social facade left to maintain, I let go. We talked about my childhood, my deepest fears, practiced new ways to cope with my past and how to move forward. And the best part, each evening I still got to run with Mars. I began to see that my dog was teaching me a new way of being. On the trails, I watched her leap over downed trees, weaving around hairpin turns, and living her life to the fullest. She had slowly taught me how to be playful again, to find freedom amidst the pain. She opened my eyes to the beauty that had always surrounded me, but I was unable to see fully. And she had led me to the breakdown I needed, to release the pain that I'd carried for too long, and to grieve properly for the first time. Leonard Cohen's famous lyric became my new life song. Cracks are how the light gets in. A paper plate taped to a metal stake signals for me to pull off of the trail and onto a gravel road for our next aid station at mile 28. As soon as I turn the corner, I see Rebecca jumping up and down, waving her arms. Mars wonders what the hell is so exciting until she sees me and nearly pulls back out of her shoes. As I slow, I squat down and let my furry coach inspect me. Mars happily cleans my face of the salt that has caked my eyebrows and forehead for miles. "You're doing it," Rebecca says, a huge smile plastered on her face, almost tearing up. I take a seat in the van and give my legs a few moments of respite while Beck refills my vest's essentials. "What's it like out there?" she asks. "It's beautiful," I tell her. "It hurts, but it's beautiful." I hop back on the trail and sink back into my meditative rhythm. The miles drift along with my mind. Thinking is somehow easier for me out here. When I run, the depressive cloud that's followed me for decades dissipates. My thoughts become fluid, and everything I've been through comes into focus. Each hardship reveals itself as a hidden strength. My pain begins to morph into blessings, lessons, and wisdom. At mile 35, I pull into the last large aid station of the race. Beck has somehow maneuvered our 22-foot camper in by the tents. She holds up her phone, and as soon as I see the face of my big brother, I break down. He's had a hell of a year, and he's a big reason why I'm running this race. We grew up with an emotionally abusive father, and through it all, he was the one person who was always there for me, no matter how hard it got. I tell Jeremy how much I love him, how proud I am that he didn't give up when it seemed that life had given up on him, and now his strength was giving me strength. A few miles later, I do a mental toe-to-head check-in. Feet? Aching. It feels like my foot bones are scrambled. Knees? Brutal. I'm having a hard time standing, much less running. Hips? Completely destroyed. Lifting my knee to my waist seems an impossible task. Head? I got this. 12 miles is a long way to hobble, to feel lightning shooting through my knees with each step. But what I have is the opportunity to observe the battle between my mind and my body, and to choose which I want to listen to. Deep breaths, calm mind. Be gracious. Keep moving. By mile 42, the pain is excruciating. But it's only physical. I've learned to smile through it. Not a fake smile. Just grateful that I get to not just be alive, but to feel alive, to receive encouragement when people catch me grimacing, to give encouragement regardless of how I feel, to be kind to myself when I realize that the ibuprofen I packed wasn't actually there, and to be inspired by the 70-year-old woman who confidently floated past me. This is what Mars had taught me, to live in the here and now, where I was no longer running from my wounds, but beside them, to make peace with them, to thank them for leading me to this moment, and to release them because they no longer serve me. I turn a corner at mile 46. I'm met by the final aid station and Rebecca asking me if I want to take Mars for the finish. I want nothing more than to finish this journey with her. But if I'd traded my trekking poles for a leash, one or both of my knees would have given out. So I bundle all the love I could from the two of them and turn the corner back into the woods. The sun is just setting and the tree canopy is dampening the remaining light. I flip my headlamp back on. 1 foot at a time, Bryce. One, and then another. I break through the edge of the woods and back into civilization. I can see the finish line. The same dozen lamps that welcomed me 12 hours earlier stood now like a lighthouse directing me back to port. Runners who had already finished, wrapped in blankets, began cheering me in. I begin to tear up. I look for my girls, but I don't see them. I cross the finish line and realize this moment is mine. It's not the finish I had envisioned, but maybe it's the one I needed. To learn that I don't need to collapse into someone's arms. I was strong enough to stand on my own for the first time in years. When I thought that my depression had swallowed me whole, Rebecca held the light for me. Her love and support and Mars's unbreakable spirit had saved my life. I stood there as if I were meeting the new me, wobbling but wiser, broken but stronger. My name is Bryce Ruiz, and this is my short.
After the break, we're getting in the RV and heading west for another short. Stay tuned.
Calling all business owners out there.
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Our planet needs businesses to be better. Newsflash, right? There's a way we do that. One of the moments in our journey as a company that Becca and I are most proud of is the day we joined 1% for the Planet 14 years ago. We know we have an impact. It's undeniable, right? It's not someone else's problem. It's our problem. And we wanted to become a part of a global network of individuals, businesses, and environmental not-for-profits driving real impact. So every year there's a day where we sit down and we plan our giving. It starts with a donation, but we've been able to bolster that with in-kind donations. There's all sorts of ways to do this. Other companies give employee volunteer time, so there's a solution that's right for you. The biggest thing is it connects us with others who care and organizations going to bat for the values we believe in. And it makes us feel part of something bigger than our small company. So if you're a business owner, big or small, publicly traded or not, there's room for you in this movement. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org/dirtbagdiaries for more information. Be a part of this. We may have more than one career, but there is only one planet. 1% for the planet.
Adjusting to the sun's morning rays, River fluttered his brown eyes open and shut, then wide open again. His gaze settled on a tree. I grabbed his hand, held him closer to the tree, and guided his tiny fingers across a branch. You're outside, baby, and that is a tree. My words flew over his head, entangled with the breeze. I was 4 days postpartum, standing beneath a tree with my son, River. Just the year before, the pandemic had thrown my life into turmoil. The dog walking company that my husband Johnny and I ran in Colorado with 3 employees came to a halt 5 months into the pandemic. We scrambled to find jobs, relying on a small emergency fund to support us. The world seemed uncertain, but amidst the chaos, a spark of adventure flickered within us. We started to dream of a different kind of life, a nomadic one, where we could escape the confines of being quarantined and embrace the freedom of the outdoors. 8 months before COVID hit in the United States, we moved out of our apartment in Colorado Springs, purchased a used 30-foot RV from Cruise America, and started living in it full time. We were constantly getting booked for weeks-long pet-sitting jobs, sometimes staying in clients' homes for up to 3 months at a time. We weren't home much, so we opted to live in the RV between gigs. Even with the RV parked full-time in Colorado Springs, traveling was always part of our long-term plan. We wanted to go west, then spend the winter snowbirding south in Florida. But our business always kept us local to the Colorado Springs area, aside from the occasional weekend trips to Moab or the White Water Festival in Salida. Now, those barriers were behind us. We were ready for a new chapter. We brainstormed and decided to go to California first. We'd never been to California and wanted a destination with both a beach and mountains. Plus, with Johnny's interest in permaculture, we were hopeful he'd be able to find farming work there. As we were scheming our departure, a friend highly recommended we take a trip to Carmel, California. He even put his house up for rent, bought an RV, and decided to come with us. We called around and applied for jobs. Within a few weeks, Johnny got a job offer to manage an orchard in Apple Hill, and I somehow landed a personal trainer position at one of the few gyms open during the pandemic. The jobs didn't pay much, and they weren't in Carmel, but they were close to a lot of different campgrounds, and we knew we could make it work. In August, we took off to California. The trek across the country led us to breathtaking places. Tahoe National Forest, the South Fork River, the Sacramento Valley, Carmel, and the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. We opened the RV doors and watched the sunrise over the American River, sipping coffee before our morning hikes. We played Uno and Monopoly at our dinette, overlooking a beautiful private 41-acre lake with a major infestation of mosquitoes. We swam in the Stampede Reservoir, nestled in the foothills of the Sierras. Our family, friends, and Instagram followers applauded our adventures. People would stop us in parking lots and at traffic lights to take pictures of our colorful, custom-painted RV. They asked about our story and said they wish they could do the same. But then things changed. When we got pregnant 3 months into our trip, the applause suddenly turned into somber warning. Phrases like, "Enjoy it now because you can't do that with kids," grew louder. Pregnant and uncertain about our next steps, I couldn't help but wonder if some of the warnings we were getting were true. Perhaps our dreams of an adventurous life were coming to an end. I didn't know anyone else raising a child in an RV. We started applying for new jobs, looking for a house to rent, journaling, and dreaming about our lives as new parents. I imagine trail running and rock climbing with the baby one day. I started thinking about which lakes were the calmest to take him kayaking for the first time. I giggled at the thought of him competing in his first Spartan race with his dad, their shared determination pushing them through each obstacle. Those dreams became the fuel that kept my spirits high and my sense of adventure alive. I wrote it all down with a note to myself that I wanted to make it a priority to keep living an adventurous life, just like we did before having a kid. As I penned those words, I started to believe we could make it happen. In October, we left California. We didn't have any friends there, and it was really expensive to rent any property. We headed south to Huntsville, Alabama. Johnny grew up there, his mom lived 5 minutes away, and my family in Atlanta was a short 3-hour drive away. He found a job with his old landscaping company. It was a temporary move. We figured in a year we'd be adjusted to parenthood and maybe return to Colorado to raise our son. We put the RV in storage, and my heart sank. I wanted both a child and adventure, and I didn't know how I would balance the two. In May, River was born. From the moment we brought him home, we spent so much time with him outside, either on the back porch or on short walks. We look at birds and turtles in the creek, the sounds of nature, birds singing, leaves rustling, soothe him. He'd nurse, attempt to focus on an object, and then go right to sleep. 3 weeks after he noticed his first tree, we took him on his first road trip to Navarre Beach in Florida. Even with the sleep deprivation that comes with caring for a newborn, we couldn't resist the call of the ocean. River's sleep schedule was unpredictable. He would wake up at 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m., but in those quiet morning hours, I would walk over to the patio door with sleepy eyes, stand on the porch with the crashing waves as background noise, nurse him, change his diaper, and watch him fall back asleep. The world seemed still and peaceful, with just the two of us under the starry sky. During the day, as the sun rose higher, Johnny would place River's feet in the cool sand, rock him in the oceanside hammock, and in the evenings, we would walk the coast together. The salty breeze brushed against our faces as we looked out at the vast expanse of the ocean. "Look how far we've come," I said to Johnny. Parenthood had changed us, yes, but it had also ignited a fire within us to keep exploring, to gain confidence as we continually adapt to change, and to keep showing our son the beauty and wonder of the world. For the next trip, we took River kayaking on a serene lake in Tennessee. A month later, a disc golf tournament in Nashville. Swimming in the backyard pool became a daily routine. And when I started a new job that let me work from home, I spent my lunch walking River down a short paved trail nearby. Alabama was nice. Being close to family was nice. But deep down, we knew we wanted to raise River in Colorado. We got married in Colorado at the summit of Pikes Peak. Colorado held a special place in our hearts. And we couldn't resist the call to return to the place that had shaped us into the adventurous souls we had become. So when River was 5 months old, we moved back. It was River's first flight, and the first time I felt I could finally take a deep breath. I smiled ear to ear the entire flight from Huntsville to the Denver airport. The mountains, the grassy plains, the deer, the fresh air, no mosquitoes. I was so eager to get back to my favorite trails. There was so much I wanted to do. And now, with River here, we could relive all those moments while simultaneously creating new ones. Johnny arrived a day later in the RV, and I could tell he was just as excited. We were home. I changed my Instagram bio to Stay Outside Mom, hoping to inspire other women to keep their sense of adventure, especially when they become moms. I made a list of all the trails I wanted to hike. I felt like running again, and so I did, pushing River in the stroller up the mountainous hills. I learned to nurse River in his carrier, while taking long treks through Cheyenne Canyon or up Blodgett Peak. My body was still recovering, particularly my hips, but I felt strong. We spent a few weeks getting acclimated, and then we got a backpack carrier to take River up the Manitou Incline, a challenging trail, 2,744 steps from the bottom to the summit. We took River to the hot springs. We hiked across an icy Bear Lake in Rocky Mountain National Park. It wasn't always easy, but we didn't find it much different from hauling 65-pound packs up 14,000-foot mountains or lugging our kayaks through wooded grasslands. Adventures are hard, period. And we were learning to adjust, just as we always had. We knew the path wouldn't always be smooth, but we embraced the journey, knowing that sharing our love for the outdoors with our child was good for all of us. At the very least, we would all sleep well. Chose to surround ourselves with supportive people who also love being outside and respected our efforts to do adventurous things with our son. They encouraged us and shared the load. We would take hikes with friends, rotating every mile or so to carry River in the carrier. Finding people who understand the mental health benefits and overall well-being that the outdoors provides, especially for children's development, meant the world. I found a hiking moms group and joined a community of women who knew their children were watching, listening, and imitating their every move. I learned about their stories and realized we shared the same core values. We wanted to be the type of moms who led by example. We wanted to be guides, showing them the way through our actions, not just our words. That day when River first touched that tree was a testament to the wonder we could share with him. A world where his imagination would run wild and his spirit would thrive. 3 years later, I still think back on all the firsts. The first time he said mountain, and the first time he saw a dragonfly. And yes, I even remember the first time he ate dirt. These moments captured in my heart, remind me of the precious gift it is to see the world through a child's curious eyes. When I see other moms on the trail carrying their kids in backpacks or nursing on a boulder, it fills my heart with joy. I know the challenges they might be facing and the doubts that may linger in their minds, but I also know the sense of empowerment that comes from embracing the outdoors with your kid. So I cheer them on. Together, we are rewriting the story of motherhood, one trail at a time, creating a world where parenthood doesn't mean the end of an adventure, but the beginning of a beautiful shared journey. I'm Ashley Lose, and this is my short.
Thank you, Bryce and Ashley, for sharing your stories. Quick segue, I think it's funny that even in the booth, I still talk with my hands. You know, like, it's kind of an interesting thing. Okay, our stories come from friends of friends, and you, our community. If you have a compelling idea for a guest or a story lead, please give us a shout. You can use the submission form on our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. Music today from Tigers in the Sky, Bedelm, Dear Nora, David Swenson, Serene Sloth, and Brennan O'Connell. The tracks are courtesy of the Artists, Track Club, or Free Music Archive. Jacob Bain and Nice Cotto composed our theme song. You can find the links to the artists on our website. This episode was produced by Lauren Delaney Miller with additional production help from Ashley Langholtz and Becca Cahal. Illustration by Walker Cahal. Becca Cahal is our executive producer. I'm Fitz Cahal, and you've been listening to Dirtbag Diaries. Thanks for tuning in.